The Daily Connect Podcast, the voice of the RNIB Connect community.
Hello, I'm Stephen Scott, and welcome to the Daily Connect Podcast for Tuesday, the 31st of July 2018. Great to be back with you once again. Thank you so much for downloading the podcast. Hope you're enjoying it so far. If you haven't had a chance to check out the live show, then please do. This podcast really just summarizes all of the big interviews and stories we cover on the show, but there's lots more. At 10 till 12 midday is when you'll find the Daily Connect on RNIB Connect Radio. It's on Freeview Channel 730 if you're in the UK, or you can listen anywhere in the world on www.rnibconnectradio.org.uk. Okay, so today on the show, we asked the question, have you ever been refused entry to a shop or restaurant or even a taxi because of your guide dog? Well, it's becoming more and more common, and our listeners are getting fed up with it. We speak to Laura Fatchie, MBE, who is a successful Paralympian, and broadcaster and social blogger Sam Little, who both have had experience of this. Also, we meet Frankie Rowan, who left her job as a prison officer after losing her sight and then became a campaigner for RNIB. We also get all techie today with tech talker Sean Priest. He joins us to explain what a smart speaker is and how it could make a difference to all of our lives. And we'll also find out about another great charity doing work to support blind and partially sighted people. This week, the charity in the spotlight is Sightline. And if that's not enough for you, we open the mailbag and log into the social media account to get your views on the big topics we've been discussing here on The Daily Connect. Producer Chris joined me in the studio today to go through what you have been saying.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
But first, to our Connect conversation on the podcast today. Have you ever been refused entry to a restaurant or shop or even a taxi because of your guide dog? Well, it might not become much of a comfort to you, but you're not alone. It is happening more and more these days. And while there's no reason not to allow a guide dog into public places, some staff just don't realise this. Now, joining me to discuss this and talk about their own experiences is Laura Fatchie, MBE, a successful Paralympian who experienced a taxi refusal after getting off a plane in Edinburgh, and broadcaster and social media fan Sam Little, who has had several bad experiences despite only having a guide dog for a year. But before we hear from them, let's hear one of our listeners' contributions to this conversation. Sean Dilley is a blind broadcaster who has worked with Channel 4, Sky News, and now BBC News. He dropped us a short recording telling us about his experiences as well as the legal issues surrounding such decisions.
Though you can't hear it, around me is power personified. Just 200-300 yards away from the House of Commons and the Lords Chamber, where the Equality Act 2010 was passed, it rolled all sorts of legislation into one, including the old Disability Discrimination Act. Now, there's a bit of an incongruity between the fact that if I am refused a taxi or a minicab here in Westminster, that's a criminal offence, and around the country. If I'm refused access to a restaurant, it's not a criminal offence. Yep, believe it or not, the law places a duty on businesses to make a reasonable adjustment, and it doesn't specifically say that a guide dog has to be allowed. That's just the way the courts generally tend to swing that way, because they need to make a reasonable adjustment in reality to allow a guide or assistance dog in most cases. So that's the legals. Obviously, if you get refused a cab or a taxi, you can go to your council, they'll help deal with it, or Transport for London if it's in London, in the capital. But if you get refused to a restaurant, then really, you are on your own. Guide Dogs is a fantastic charity. It's life-changing. I'm a very proud volunteer with Guide Dogs, but there's only so much the charity can do there as well, because the reality is that there are just so many access refusals, and engagement officers up and down the country, up and down the United Kingdom, are dealing with these things all the time. So in reality, it's all about empowerment and us dealing with that, which, you know, to a degree means that we can end up banging our head off a brick wall trying to deal with something that is deeply upsetting, that the law is not entirely clear cut upon, even though it should be, and something that would cost us fortunes to deal with. And I'm aware I'm recording this, I can hear the frustration in my own voice. I've probably had about 100 access refusals in my 19 years of guide dog ownership. Though the interesting thing was, I went into a local branch of a fast food restaurant at King's Cross the other day, and a security guard told me, no dogs, no dogs. I said, it's a guide dog. He said, well, I'm just doing my job here. I said, well, do you understand? I can't see it's a guide dog. Yeah, I know, but the rule here is no dogs. I don't advocate this course of action to anybody, but I just said, look, fella, I'm... don't want to fall out with you personally. I think I'm bigger than you. I'm not going. And the customers, they leapt into my defence and they said, look, this is ridiculous. And I was just saying to them, look, have a heart, forget what the law says. And I honestly don't think that people understand how it feels, unless you've had it, to be discriminated against in this way. And then the danger is that even raising these things makes people seem as if, well, as if you're the troublemaker. And that's what I'd like to see end. I'd like to see a very clear system of accountability where if you are refused, it could be looked at under a law that's clear cut, unlike the moment, which is as clear as mud.
So that gets our conversation underway on the subject of guide dog refusals into taxis, into public buildings, into shops, restaurants, whatever. With me now to discuss this in more detail is Laura Fatchie and Sam Little. Both of you have experienced similar experiences in being refused entry. I'm going to start with you, Laura. You experienced this getting off a plane in Edinburgh, I believe, trying to get a taxi.
Yeah, flying up from Manchester, and we went to the taxi company office to pick up the taxi, and fortunately, and we were in a really good environment where the employers of the taxi driver who refused to take me, they were that shocked and disgusted that they suspended him on the spot, and there was so many people who stepped in and said, look, we'll take you, I'll take you in my taxi, and you know, the outrage on my behalf was so kind of encouraging, and actually it could have been a much more upsetting experience. I have in the past been refused access to restaurants, and it was a lot more upsetting that time than this most recent refusal.
Okay, Sam, let me bring you in. Tell me about your experience of access refusals. You've in fact made a video about it.
Yeah, so I'm very new to the world of guide dogs. I've only had my guide dog Ziggy for a year, and he's my first one. And just very recently, I experienced my third taxi refusal in space of less than a year. So I decided to use my platform as a contributor for BBC The Social to make a video about it, because I just felt like, you know, it was ridiculous in this day and age that this was still happening. And the response is amazing. As Laura says, I think the majority of people are usually enraged and disgusted at this type of behaviour. And I, too, myself, has had the support of fellow taxi drivers who have experienced, you know, witnessed the situation and have jumped in to help. But at the end of the day, it's still happening. But I do feel like the more awareness that's been raised with the help of social media and people like ourselves talking about how it makes us feel and the impact it actually has on us will hopefully make a huge difference. But like Laura says, unless you're in the right environment where people are witness to what's going on or can help you deal with the situation, it's really, really difficult to prove and move forward.
Sean Dilley is a broadcaster. Sam, you work in this world as well. You work for the BBC, as you say, in the social side of things. Also, you know, Laura, you are a very successful Paralympian. I mean, we're not all shrinking violets here, are we? And you know, dealing with this must be rather frustrating, Laura, especially for you. I mean, this was your first experience of Edinburgh, I believe.
Oh no, not my first experience.
Oh well, that's good. that's what I read. Okay.
What I found, I was very shocked by it in Edinburgh, because generally when I have been there, it is an extremely guide dog friendly city, and I've never encountered anything like any sort of refusal problems before. But I think social media is great for us, because we do use a lot of social media, and making people aware of what's going on has, you know, the response is great from social media. And the more I do wonder whether the more it happens to people who have access to social media, the more we can raise awareness. And hopefully, you know, I mean, it isn't nice for us to have to experience it. It does make you feel a little bit, you know, it hurts, to be perfectly frank. It does hurt to be refused. But also, I think we have a duty as people who have a bit more power over social media to bring people's attention to it. And yeah.
Is that the answer, Sam? Is it about getting us, you know, more awareness of this on social media, almost to the point of shaming people who do this, or shaming companies that let this happen?
Yes and no. I mean, I kind of have my own personal policy of if I encounter a situation like this, I try and deal with it locally, because I think a lot of the time it's just due to lack of education and lack of awareness. So, you know, for example, I got refused from a local supermarket, and the security guard kept asking me to leave with Ziggy. But I honestly think it was down to the fact that he had been told no dogs, was very new in his job at a security guard, and it was almost like he'd never seen a guide dog before. But I honestly think it was because nobody had, when he'd been trained for his job, nobody had said, well, whilst we don't allow dogs in our stores, we do allow assistant dogs, and educated them on the different types of dogs that are allowed in supermarkets by law in the UK. But there does come a point where it's happening so often, and you just feel like, well, the only way to do it is to shout out to the world, this has happened to me, this is not good enough. And, you know, while shaming doesn't sound like a very nice thing to do, at the end of the day, they should be ashamed, because not only are they breaking the law, but they're discriminating our disability against us, they're preventing us from leading independent lives, and they should be ashamed of that. But I don't think it's down to shame, it's also the legal side of it and company policy side of it. They have to have procedures in place. So, for example, the taxi driver who refused Laura, he was suspended on the spot. So there needs to be a zero tolerance policy towards it. Can't just be like, oh, we're really sorry, we'll make sure it won't happen again. You know, they need to know that it's wrong, it's illegal, and they cannot do that, especially when it comes to taxis.
More coming up from both Sam and Laura in a few moments' time as we continue our Connect conversation this week. But if you want to join in the conversation on air, then you can do Monday to Friday, 10 till 12. You can call the studio on 0345 602 0025. That's our number, 0345 602 0025. Lines are open Monday to Friday, 10 a.m. till 12 p.m. for the Connect conversation, and indeed anything else you want to share with us on the programme. Or alternatively, at any other time of the day, you can drop us a message on social media at RNIB Radio on Twitter, on Facebook, and also you can email radio at rnib.org.uk. We'll have more of that conversation coming up in moments.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
Now, there's a wide range of reasons why people decide to become RNIB campaigners. Frankie Round from Durham was a prison officer for many years before losing her sight. She told us how she got involved and what it meant to her.
I lost my sight a couple of years ago off the back of a stroke. So I currently have no sight in my right eye at all and no central vision in my left. I've got diabetic retinopathy and glaucoma in the left eye as well. But with regards to my sight loss, it is actually a recent thing. I had 20/20 vision up until a couple of years ago till I actually had the stroke. So a bit of a big change for me. I attended an event at St James's Park Football Stadium in Newcastle where there were various different sight services and groups and sort of businesses to do with sight loss. So there was a lot of technology groups there. There was obviously charities there and things. And that's where I first met Mike Hall and Francesca Di Giorgio from the RNIB. And they sort of had a chat with me and explained all about sort of RNIB Connect and campaigning and what their sort of main aims and goals were. And it just sounded really interesting. I had a lot of kind of ideas. And also I was ready to sort of hear other people's ideas and things as to what the charity and things were all about. Again, with it being a relatively new thing for me, I wasn't really aware of any of the work that the RNIB did or anything like that. My previous job, I worked as a prison officer, which obviously made me come into contact with various different people from various different backgrounds, a lot of quite challenging situations at some time. But also I think the main skill you need to do that kind of job is to be a good communicator. So I consider myself as a good listener. I can adapt to what people are saying, and I'm quite good at taking things on board and also giving my opinion as to how things can maybe improve or how people can look at things in maybe a different way. So I think my experience as a prison officer definitely helps with regards to connecting campaigning, because obviously you get people who've been campaigning and things for years who might not have seen things from a, quote, younger perspective, or they might have sort of been doing the same sort of thing and have the same sort of goals for a long time. So I think it helps being a campaigner and being able to listen and communicate and also get your opinions and points across in a relatively simple manner, really. Try and shadow as much as I can various different events and having meetings and things like that. Not so much full-on campaigning myself, but just see how others do it, really. I was fortunate enough to attend the meeting in Newcastle that they had to conclude and confirm the fact that the council has agreed to the street charter and all the suggestions that the various charities have put forward to make Newcastle more accessible. So that was really positive in the fact that to see it at the end when all the hard work had come together and see what kind of a result it had made, really, and how it had changed, obviously, people's lives around Newcastle was fantastic. So I've just tried to sort of apply things as much as I can locally, obviously, with me being from Durham. So I sort of got together with a few of the connectors in Durham and just tried to apply some of those things and see how we could change things locally as well as a region, really. Getting strength in numbers with regards to campaigning is the main thing. I think the bigger group and the more diverse group you can get together is definitely a massive positive thing. I would definitely recommend and encourage younger people to come forward and try and get their opinions across and points across and just how sight loss affects them, because one thing I've noticed is that the RNIB sort of committee that I'm on and that the meetings we have tend to be sort of the older generation. And they've obviously been working towards the same targets and goals for quite a while. And I think especially now with technology and things, and sight loss affects the younger generation maybe slightly differently than the older generation. So I think definitely the more younger people we can get on board, the better. And just get taken part in things like the Blue Badge campaign that I took part in. Just getting your opinions across about how things actually affect people personally as opposed to in like a wide spectrum, really, because I think it's really important. There's so many different types of sight loss and it affects so many people in different ways. Again, just the more diverse and the more opinions and voices we can get heard is a really positive thing.
Absolutely. Well, thank you to Frankie Ryan for sharing. And we have lots more stories like that to come on the Daily Connect over the next few weeks. If you want to add your voice and talk about how you got involved with RNIB, or maybe tell us a way that you might like to get involved, then do get in touch with us. You can email radio@rnib.org.uk or find us on social media.
The Daily Connect podcast.
Let's get back to our Connect conversation this week that we had today on the show with Laura Facci, MBE, Paralympian and blind broadcaster and social media blogger Sam Little. They were joining me to talk about guide dog refusals. And one of the questions that I was asking before we stopped for the break was around the whole issue of whether or not people should be shamed, named and shamed, essentially, for refusing us access to public places. That was a question I put to Laura Facci in the second half of our conversation.
Yeah, I do. I think I'm on my second guide dog now, and so I've been using guide dog for 12 years now. And my whole family, I've grown up with guide dogs around, so my mum's on to her sixth, and my two brothers have guide dogs as well. So we've got a lot of experience, and I don't remember my mum being refused quite so much when I was younger, and I don't know if it was just we didn't go out as much or what, but it seems to be getting worse rather than better, and I just feel that we need to start making people accountable for it rather than being quiet and letting it get on, because I have done that in the past. I've just, I've argued my case on the spot, but then I've never really done anything about it if it's not got anywhere in the past. And I'm fed up of it, to be honest. I'm just a bit fed up of being made to feel different, being made to, not be able to just go anywhere I want with my guide dog, because that's the whole point of a guide dog. It's that independence. And I think people don't quite realise that they're not an accessory. They're not just a dog. They're there because we need them. We rely on them, and they allow us to live a normal life.
I completely agree with Laura. I mean, as I said, I'm really new to this, and you know, the first time it happened to me, I think I was in such a shock that it actually happened, because I'd heard all about taxi refusals, but in my naivety, I didn't actually think it would happen to me. And then the second time, I was lucky that I had friends around me who, you know, took photos and gave of evidence and stuff. And then the third time, I had other taxi drivers around me. But it's just, you know, like Laura said, it's frustrating, because the whole point of having a guide dog is to allow you to live independently. So to constantly come up against these hurdles all the time, it's just ridiculous. And, you know, we're in the 21st century, we're in an age of awareness and, you know, more and more equality, and it just shouldn't be something that we have to deal with. So I do think it's something that we need to shout out a bit more. I think, you know, I know myself, I always try and keep the peace, and you just want to make things as easy as possible. You don't want to get in the way, because, you know, you already feel like you're a bit of a hindrance. But I think we as ourselves, the people with disabilities and using guide dogs, we need to change that mindset. You have to think, no, we have a right to be here with our guide dogs and to use these services. And, you know, we're not going to put up with it anymore. I think we, you know, like Sean Dilley said earlier, you know, guide dogs are a charity, an amazing charity, and they can only do so much. So I think it's up to the rest of us to really step up and show our support and show our strength and show people why it's so important that we don't have to deal with these obstacles, so we can be independent and show that people can lead independent lives despite having a disability.
I suppose I'm coming at this from a slightly different angle, because I've just applied for a guide dog, so I'm just at that early stage in this process. And I guess it's something which I'm worried about. I am worried about it. It's something that's in my mind at this point. If, and obviously, Sam, from your point of view, you are fairly new to this. Was it in your mind? And is it something that would have, and would it now put you off continuing to have a guide dog?
I think if I'd had a better insight as to the types of situations when I was applying for it, I definitely would have thought twice, because when you're talking to people about getting a guide dog, it's not usually about those kind of things. It's about the personal benefit that a guide dog can bring to you and the independence that a guide dog can bring to you. And when you're learning how to use a guide dog, yes, the guide dog mobility instructor does go over these things with you, but like I said, until it actually happens to you, it doesn't really sink in, like, the effects that that can have. But I have to say, all the issues I have with having a guide dog, despite the many benefits it brings, is to do with the public awareness. It's to do with being refused taxis. It's to do with people coming up to touch my dog despite all the paraphernalia that my dog is wearing. And I honestly feel if those things didn't happen, then my guide dog experience would be completely positive. But I would also say to you, as someone thinking about having a guide dog, that it does change your life. And you shouldn't let things like that stop you from having one, because hopefully the more people see people using a guide dog and it be, you know, a part of everyday life, the less that these type of scenarios will happen.
I find that really interesting. Laura, where do you stand on this?
I would never be put off having a guide dog. The benefit I find from having the dog, you know, the dog by my side on a daily basis is incredible. And as part of what I do, sometimes when I go away to race, I don't get to take my guide dog with me because I'm abroad, and if I'm out of Europe, I don't really like to take them long haul, so I'll leave them at home. And I miss having that independence at, you know, on my left arm all the time. And I just would, nothing would put me off having them because of the quality of life that they give me. I can understand why people could potentially be put off, but I hate to think that people, you know, ignorant people are winning. They're not. We need to just be more forceful with education, I think, and make people aware around us of what we expect from the public to treat the guide dogs. Because I couldn't imagine life without one.
That was Laura Fatchie and Sam Little, and of course Sean Dilley as well, joining us earlier in the podcast, talking today on the Dilley Connect about guide dog refusals. Add your voice to the conversation in the usual ways, radio@rnib.org.uk. Find us on social media and share your thoughts on this story. We'd really love to read them out on air.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
Okay, time now for our Society of the Week. It is the opportunity for us to celebrate one of the many organisations out there that do wonderful work for blind and partially sighted people. Sightline is the one that we're focusing on today, and it's been running its helpline now for 16 years, offering a listening ear to those who just need someone to talk to when the whole coping with sight loss becomes overwhelming. Now they're launching a new befriending service to reach blind and partially sighted people who have become isolated. Pete Hoy told us how it works.
So I'm Pete, and I'm the service manager at Sightline. Sightline was a charity that was formed in 2002, and we've been running a helpline since then. And that helpline has been open in the evenings from 6 till 10. We kept it open at that time because we wanted it to be a service that people could access when other services were closed. And the reason for that is that when people have a diagnosis, it's important that they're actually able to talk to somebody, and our helpline call handlers can talk through and help people understand some of the issues that they're facing and provide information and emotional support. So if people just need to get things off their chest or think them through, then they call the helpline. We wouldn't say it was a counselling service because that's a specialist form of intervention that requires years of training. But we are a peer-based service. All of the people answering the phone at Sightline have gone through sight loss and understand. What we aim to do is allow people the space to express what's going on when they've been diagnosed or if something's happened. Half the time, people have their own solutions, but the experience of sight loss is so overwhelming that it's hard for people to think it through. We're here for people, and you know we're dedicated to helping people improve their own situation. The befriending service is a new thing. But what we realized is that the problem of isolation in society is a huge thing, and it can lead people to have really poor health and really just not live life to the full. So what we did is we got some money from the Big Lottery. Thank you, Big Lottery. That has enabled us to set up this service whereby people can get a call once a week, usually, with a trained volunteer who either has eyesight problems themselves or somebody in their family has, or they know about sight loss through work. But the main thing is our volunteers are good at conversations, they're able to listen, and they can share interests and things in common with people. We've got about 12 volunteers at the moment, and we're recruiting more. But we've actually set this up so it's a very easy service to people to volunteer for because they do it from their own home. Obviously, people get some training on how to be a befriender. But after that, the calls, once they're agreed through a befriending plan, are automated. So as a volunteer, your phone rings at, say, 7:30 to call, say, Anne in Accrington. And it calls you up and says, hello, this is Sightline. Press any key to start the outgoing call. We did that because we wanted to avoid our volunteers, who are mostly people with sight loss, wanted to avoid them calling the wrong numbers and being worried about that. So it's a very carefully designed service. We'd like people to think about our service as one that helps people along the road. As people encounter disabilities, what can often happen is that their life changes, social contact reduces. We're looking to try and help people develop the confidence to turn that back and start to find new ways of socializing and engaging with society, getting out there and doing new things, to explore opportunities. The thing is also, befrienders and the person who's befriended will develop an ongoing relationship, a one of trust, so that there isn't anything pushy about the way the service works, and it is very much led by the person who is receiving the service. But the intention is always to try and get some progress so that, in the end, people don't need us. That's what we'd really like, people to form their own friendships and overcome their own isolation in their own part of the world. The best way to either volunteer or obtain the service is to to call our helpline on 0800 587 2252. The helpline is open from 6pm to 10pm, 7 days a week. If you use email, the best thing to do is email us at info@sightline.org.uk and a member of staff will get back to you. It's as simple as that.
Brilliant. Well, thank you, Pete Hoy, for telling us all about Sightline. That's our Society of the Week. Nominate yours, radio@rnib.org.uk.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
And if you want to get involved with anything you're hearing on the programme, then please do. You can email radio@rnib.org.uk. You can also check me out on social media. Yeah, check me out at Tech Talker Steve as well. You'll find me, or you can find the radio station at RNIB Radio. Now, it was time to get techie today, as it's Tuesday, and we asked the question, what is a smart speaker? These are the fastest growing trend in the tech world these days, but what exactly is it? What does it do? And should you get one? Well, Sean Priest, for some reason, our Tech Talk presenter, asked me to leave the studio while he spilled the beans.
Shh. While Stephen is out of the studio foraging for biscuits, I need to confess something. I'm not a clever man. The only things I left school with was a slightly wonky birdhouse I made in woodwork and knits. But the good news is, it doesn't matter, because everything else around me is getting smarter. These days it seems like you can shove the word smart in front of anything. Phone, home, TV, watch, light bulb, tees, e-pants, and of course, speakers. Yes, smart speakers are definitely the must-have gadget of the last few years. But are they really? Well, let's find out. Let's strip away all the jargon and the tech and see just what a smart speaker can do for you. Alright Cliff, calm down. Yes, we all like speakers, but what makes smart speakers smart? The most obvious thing is that you can just use your voice and tell these speakers what you want them to do. You know that old battered radio you have in your kitchen? Well, imagine not having to retune it to different stations or anything like that. Instead, you just ask it to play, I don't know, RNIB Connect Radio or Cliff Richard, and it does it. Not loud enough? Just ask it to turn the volume up, or if it's too loud, down. Don't like the song? Just say next. It's as easy as that. Now, I know what you're thinking. You've had gadgets before that claim that you can just tell them what to do and they'll do it, and it never understands you.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
Well, it's got so much better, and these do work really well. Let's try it out. I've got an Amazon smart speaker here. Play RNIB Connect Radio.
RNIB Connect Radio from Sean's TuneIn.
Volume up.
Sharing horizons that are new to us. Watching us.
Stop. Now come on, admit it, that is pretty cool. Anyway, before you can tell the speaker what you want it to do, you need to wake it up. And how do you do that? Well, of course, you use a wake word. Now, just so you know, in this recording, I've removed the wake word. So in that previous example, when you heard the beep, that was the smart speaker letting me know that it heard the wake word and was waiting for the command. The reason I removed the wake word from this recording? Well, if someone's listening on a smart speaker or have a smart speaker in their room, then there's a chance that I will set off their smart speaker and that will result in me getting hundreds of emails with people saying I'm a terrible, terrible person. Now, the wake word is different depending on who made the smart speaker. Is it an Amazon or a Google or an Apple HomePod? But the main point is, whichever smart speaker you've got or are getting, the way they understand you so well is really impressive. Okay, so I think we can all agree that is pretty clever, but that's not where it stops. It's not just about music. Oh no, there's a lot more to it than that. Here's a quick example of other things a smart speaker can do. What's the time?
It's 11:18 p.m.
Weather.
Currently, it's 14 degrees Celsius with partly cloudy skies.
How do you spell biscuit?
Biscuit is spelled B-I-S-C-U-I-T.
How old is Cliff Richard?
Cliff Richard is 77 years old.
How tall is he?
Cliff Richard is 5 feet 11 inches tall.
Set an alarm for 7 a.m.
Alarm set for 7 a.m. tomorrow.
Set a 4-minute timer.
4 minutes, starting now.
What's 64 times 312?
64 multiplied by 312 equals 19,968.
What's the temperature inside?
Inside, it's 19.5.
Set heating to 22 degrees.
The heat's set to 22.
Turn off studio light.
Okay.
Buy razor blades.
Based on Sean's order history, I found Wilkinson Sword Hydro 5 sensitive razor blades, pack of 8 blades. It's £17.99. Would you like to buy it?
And that's not even scratching the surface of what you can do. You've got general knowledge, maths, news, timers, alarms, games, reading audiobooks, podcasts. You can make calls, you can use them as intercoms, and they are getting smarter all the time. Now, there are a couple of things that you do need in order to use a smart speaker. You will need a Wi-Fi internet connection and either a smartphone or a tablet or a computer to set one up. But it is easy to set up, and once it's done, that's it. Now let's talk about us. For the visually impaired and blind, smart speakers are so incredibly useful. Everything about it is spoken, there's nothing to see. And if you use them for nothing other than an accessible radio, they are well worth the money. So there you go. Why not try one out? It's a smart thing to do. What? That was funny. Tough crowd.
Yeah, quite right. Quite right. Boo them down. That's our own Sean Priest there from Tech Talk telling us all about smart speakers. Thank you so much for that, Sean.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
Finally on the podcast for today, it certainly is the show that gets you talking. And last week's show was no different. Lots of you have been in touch in various ways, and we thought we'd go through some of the feedback with our producer, Chris.
Well, we had our first week, our debut week of the Daily Connect last week, and we had a few comments, not least of which Ian Beverley wrote a blog on vitalk.co.uk entitled Radio Makes the Ideal Connection. He said, R&IB Connect Radio has changed this as it offers a unique opportunity to promote a whole variety of true life stories involving the VI community. It's not an insular one, as it encourages involvement from right across the board, whether visually impaired or fully sighted, everyone is welcome. The station has a wide variety of programming which spans from specific music genres to consumer and opinion-led content. It has always encouraged listener content, but starting this week is a new program that takes this as a stage further. The Daily Connect, presented by Stephen Scott,
hello,
gives listeners the opportunity to get involved in discussions and content that is directly influenced by them. It's on air from 10 a.m. till 12 noon, Monday to Friday, and as mentioned, gives you the ideal opportunity to be involved in discussions and topics that have great relevance. So we're being heard, Stephen, we're being heard.
And just a lovely blog by Ian. He's telling the community about the show. I have to say, VI Talk, brilliant show, and they have a podcast as well. They've got a podcast, they've got a blog, they've got Facebook, and it is a great community. Lots of people just doing what we want people to do here, which is come on and talk about the issues that matter to them.
Absolutely. Share
and
your
invite
opinion.
Conversation.
Absolutely. You know? Well, speaking of which, we had another listener get in touch. Natalie got in touch. She said, just wanted to share that as I'm doing my work, I'm also listening in to the new Daily Connect, and it's really interesting and really well done. The chat today, and this was Friday Natalie was listening in, is with Stephen Scott, Simon Pauly and Nikki Kelly, and I've just heard their discussion about audio description. It's a fascinating discussion, really relaxed and fun and enjoyable. Well done, team.
Yeah, well, it was a great discussion, actually, and, you know, a great opportunity to talk about a range of topics. Again, if you want to be part of the forum, you're more than welcome to be. So, that's great, and it's great to get that feedback.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Natalie.
And our final part of the general commentary, this is actually a personal one, because I just received a phone call from a listener just before you went on air, Stephen, who said that she had been very, very lonely with her sight loss recently, and after returning from a holiday, she discovered RNIB Connect Radio, and it's turned her life around. She loves the features we broadcast and the music we use, but most importantly, she appreciates that everything we do is informative, for her, always kind and done with real humour, which she really loves. She feels the discovery of this show has been an incredibly positive event in her life, and as such, she wished to make a donation to RNIB. So well done.
That's nice.
Well
that's
done,
really
Stephen.
Nice. Well done to everybody actually on the team, because everyone contributes to this. You know, it's not the Stephen Scott show. I mean, as much as I might want it to be, it's not. You know, it's about everybody here putting in, and, you know, Alan Russell in the morning, me here on the Daily Connect, Simon in the afternoon, the Talking Book show. Everything is geared towards blind and partially sighted people, and the more people who realise that and get to know that, the better. So what I ask that person to do, and what I ask everybody to do, is tell 10 of their friends to tell 10 of their friends to tell 10 of their friends about how wonderful we are.
Absolutely. And she was so positive and energetic about the station. I think she will, Stephen. I think she will.
Excellent. By the way, just to prove this is live on Twitter, Ian Beverley's just replied, "Eek, that's my blog you're reading out." Many thanks. So hi to Ian. Right, let's talk about the big debate of last week, which was around visually impaired actors playing the parts of visually impaired roles, essentially, but actually more often the case these days, sighted actors taking on those roles.
Absolutely. The Connect conversation itself was heated enough, but that conversation continued onto social media platforms. Francesca was in touch. She said, "Such an interesting topic. I've discussed with colleagues and friends quite a bit, having been involved with disability rights since the age of 11. I'm not blind or partially sighted, but I am a wheelchair user, so cautious to speak outside of my experience when it should be blind and partially sighted people's voices centred on this, but I really enjoyed reading Ellie's excellent blog. I agree I would prefer to have a sensitive representation that involves disabled people than nothing at all. In fact, one of my favourite recent film representations of someone with a similar impairment to mine has a non-disabled actor playing a refreshingly multifaceted disabled person. However, the director, writer did have a family member with the impairment, and the film's focus was on good representation for an Indian audience. However, I am passionate about inclusion of disabled actors, especially when we consider the exclusion of disabled people employed in the arts, but also the negative attributes of the non-disabled gaze, which is difficult to avoid no matter how much research a non-disabled actor and crew undertake if you've not had that first-hand complex experience of what living in a society as a disabled person is like." She goes on to talk about Natalie Dormer's representation in Darkness, but unless we want spoilers, Stephen, then we may have to avoid that last part of the conversation.
Yeah.
But there was the opposite end of the scale. Just after you got off air, Daisy from Plymouth, a listener, called in with her views on how she felt the conversation went.
"I understand the impulse to feel pleased that people are being consulted and that there's accurate representation, but I think it's damaging because, particularly in Natalie Dormer's case, this was a vanity project for her. And also that she didn't want to be typecast as a strong woman. She's basically using the blind experience, this perception that blind women are weak and vulnerable, in order to showcase her depth as an actor. I think this is not something the RNIB should have been supporting. I think Natalie Dormer should make space for disabled artists. She had a wealth of stories she could have chosen from. Why did she choose this one? But to then use that in order to give yourself a career advantage, it feels like exploitation to me. Even if she tries to do it accurately and as sensitively as possible, the fact that she's taken that story, it does feel like exploitation from my perspective."
So that's Daisy's view.
Yeah.
Daisy, of course, called in during the show, which was great. And, you know, we welcome that on 0345 602 0025. Were there any other comments around this?
Absolutely. There was a few actually on Facebook. Stuart got in touch. He just said, "Interesting topic and great to see this type of content being debated. It all makes for some great radio too." We absolutely agree, Stuart. And then Michael and David got into a bit of a tête-à-tête on Facebook
too. Oh dear, sorry.
Michael said, "I think it's fine if the actor does a good good job of it and does it realistically. But if they're just strengthening any misconceptions people tend to have about blind or partially sighted people, then no. David replied, I don't think the point is whether or not the actor is doing a good job, but rather that these able-bodied actors are taking away roles from disabled actors. Most disabled actors can't get work as able-bodied roles after all, which Michael then finally responded saying, yeah, I was thinking that after posting my initial comment. Hadn't had my wake-up coffee yet. I realised halfway through walking to the shops. As you know, being the host of the Daily Connect, each week on the Daily Connect, we're launching a Daily Connect poll. The new one is out just now. If you want to go to Twitter at RNIB Radio, hashtag The Daily Connect, you can check out this week's poll. But last week, our poll was, do you use audio description on TV or at the movies? Poll results are in, and 80% say yes, always.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. 0% say yes, occasionally. And 20% say no, never.
Now, that is interesting.
Yes.
No middle ground there.
No middle ground at all. It's one thing or the other. And I'm actually surprised with the large number, especially based on our forum conversation last week, where your guests, Simon and Nikki, neither of those use audio description.
And I did. So, I mean, it was one third in that room.
So, almost the opposite of what our poll shows. But the poll, it was a great way to get it out there. Becca was in touch. She said she absolutely loves audio description. She has the service switched on permanently via her system, which is Sky. It's affected her choice of viewing, as she mainly opts to watch audio descripted programmes or movies rather than anything else.
Yeah, I get that. I'm exactly the same.
Yeah.
I wouldn't watch a show if it doesn't have AD. And it's not because I'm snobby about it. It's just because if I can't really get anything out of it, and I'm going to miss something important. I mean, I've tried it. There are some shows I've really wanted to watch, and I thought, okay, look, I'll try it. I'll just go for it. And then I miss half of the action, and it just gets annoying. It's usually when things happen, like if someone gets a text, you know, and the camera will go to the phone.
There's text on screen.
And text on screen, or subtitling.
Uh-huh.
That's a no-go.
Well, it's interesting, because I know that you're a big fan of Netflix. You use
Huge.
Netflix a lot.
Yeah.
Beck obviously uses Sky. But we're going to talk in a second about the BBC. And that seems more divisive than these other services. But first of all, we did have a listener call in, Matthew Clark, with his thoughts on audio description.
Hello, Weekly Connect. I'm Matthew Clark. Audio description, wow. I never used to use it when I was younger because I'm partially sighted. I thought I could just get really close to the screen and everything would be fine. But no. Since I've started using audio description, the amount of extra detail you can suddenly understand and appreciate about a TV programme, a film, is just brilliant. And the progress we're making on the availability of AD is brilliant as well. But there are so many places where I think we need to campaign so much more and where I want RNIB to step it up a gear, honestly. I'm a massive Apple fan, but for a company that cares so much about accessibility, the availability of audio description on iTunes purchases, films especially, that I've noticed since having an Apple TV, is appalling. Why is there not more audio description with content purchased from iTunes? I think it's a scandal, especially after Netflix has started putting so much more audio described content online. Other catch-up services away from the BBC, they need to get their act together a bit more. But also, we need to campaign more about audio description in cinemas. So many screens don't have the equipment in, so many staff don't know how the kit works, but worst of all, I find most often, is just it is so hard to find when an audio described showing is available. Some cinema chains don't advertise it clearly, easily searchable, and that affects whether I can go and see a film with my friends, when my friends want to see it, when I want to see it. And that has affected me one too many times. Luckily, it wasn't too bad in Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, because I knew all the words to the songs anyway. But with other films, it's much more important. So come on, let's keep this audio description campaign growing, please.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. And I think that's the important thing. It's finding out what is audio described. You know, Matthew, he's talking about going to see a movie. I wanted to go and see Skyscraper at the weekend, and I couldn't find any information about where it was audio described, if it was even audio described. And a lot of the cinemas now don't want you calling in, it would appear.
No.
So trying to get through to someone is very difficult to get the information. And then when you get there, and our own Alan Russell can testify to this, sometimes the audio description doesn't work.
Yes, and then, as Alan was telling us, Stephen, what happens is they say, we're really sorry it didn't work. Here's some free tickets, come back. He tried again, and it didn't work again.
Yeah, that's just ridiculous. And the thing is that I've been to cinema showing where I remember going in, and we sat down, my wife and I sat down, we put the headphones on, as you do. You get given these headphones, you sit down with them, very uncomfortable things. You put them on, and the only way I could get the AD to work was to turn my head all the way to the right. So I had to sit, I couldn't look at the screen, not that it really mattered anyway, but I couldn't look at the screen. So and there was a guy sitting next to me who eventually asked me, why do you keep looking at me? So I had to have a conversation with him to explain what I was doing, why, first of all, why I'm wearing headphones in the cinema. Secondly, why I'm looking at him. It got a bit awkward, shall we say.
Yes, well, you went with your wife. You could have gone home with someone else.
Okay, yeah, I will say that didn't happen.
Okay.
And that's good news for all concerned, I think. You have to ask my wife about that one. But listen, just a quick note on the Daily Connect poll for this week, because, you know, we're continuing this every week. We're putting it there, and I'm retweeting it every day so that you can go and try it again. So if you're on Twitter and you want to answer the question, then please do. The question this week is, do you think your life as a visually impaired person has improved in the last 8 years? And the question and the answers there are yes of lots of ways, or only slightly, or no, not at all. And I'm interested to see, there's lots of votes coming in on that one right now. Add your thoughts on that one, because it comes out of comments from Marcia de Cordova, the Shadow Minister for Disabled People, who told our Reflections programme on Sunday that she believes that there hasn't been any progress for disabled people, blind and partially sighted people in particular, in the last 8 years. And she's talking about in terms of employment prospects, in terms of social attitudes. So I think it's a good conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. To have. So quite a statement to make.
It is, actually.
So I'd be very curious to find out how our listeners feel about that.
Well, she's a politician. So, you know, she's going to say things like
bold
that.
Bold statements.
But at the same token, you know, well, you could argue, well, what are you doing about it, Marcia de Cordova? That would be my next question. But anyway, I didn't do the interview, so it's fine. So that's our poll this week. It's on Twitter. Find it at RNIB Radio. We'll link it on Facebook as well. Let's move on to the BBC, because I did put a tweet up this week suggesting that people might want to get in touch, as I was due to speak to the head of accessibility for iPlayer, and indeed the BBC in some ways as well. So,
well, this
got a pretty good comment.
Absolutely. Released a torrent of social media activity.
Torrent.
I like my big words, yes. And we had so many people get in touch, mostly to sort of suggest things that you could discuss with BBC's head of accessibility. Stephen, via Twitter, was in touch. He said, audio description is so hard to find, certainly compared to subtitles. When will this be made much easier, on a par with subtitles, at the click of a button?
Great question.
Then Dennis, also in touch via Twitter, has happened to me on at least 3 occasions and I have complained. First episode of the series is not automatically audio described, that someone seems to have to complain before they do it. You've mentioned this a few times on TikTok.
Yeah, and it's come up a few times. It happens more often than not, unfortunately, and it's something that the guys at the BBC are very keen to stop happening. But it just feels a little bit sometimes like it's an oversight.
Yes.
It's just one of those things. To me, it's like a file on a computer should just be over here somewhere, copied into that folder, and then it would all be fine. I mean, I say this with no knowledge at all about how it works, but it just feels like it's a bit of an oversight somewhere.
Well, another thing that could be an oversight, and a few people have been in touch about this, one of which was Dave. Can AD be made something you turn on or off rather than having to search for it in the programs, so that the setting is remembered all the time? And if AD is available, it will play automatically if the setting is on, and across all platforms as well. A few people have mentioned that as well, that it's not as easy as subtitles to just turn on and off and to remember that setting.
That's right. So if you, I mean, the example I often give is Netflix. So if I turn audio description on the box I'm viewing Netflix on, it's on there. But if I go to another device and turn on audio description, it's not on.
Yeah.
So that's a problem. You know?
Absolutely.
It's a setting for you, and you would think these days especially that would be quite easy to solve. But one thing that a little tip for you, by the way, if you've got an iPhone and you turn on audio descriptions, you go into the settings and turn on audio descriptions, in the settings of the iPhone, and whenever you go to any app at all that has an audio descriptive track, it'll play it. So that's
so
a handy
start
little tip.
At the baseline, start from the phone settings themselves rather than the app settings.
So you go to Netflix or Prime or whatever, you know, it'll turn it on for you. So that's good to know.
You're a wealth of knowledge.
I do my best. But no, those are great questions there. And, you know, we have put some of those questions to, just to let you know where we are with that. So I had a conversation with Gareth Ford-Williams. He is, he's not just involved with the iPlayer, actually. He's involved in a whole wide range of aspects of the BBC. It's a big organisation, as you know. So, you know, he's involved in lots of different areas. And he has put a lot of those questions to his team as well. So we're going to be getting back in touch with him soon to answer all of the questions you've sent. So everything you've sent has been put to him, and we will get answers, I promise you. And that interview will come out in the next couple of weeks on Tech Talk. So looking forward to it.
Absolutely.
Now, you know me, I like to talk about me occasionally.
Oh, just a bit.
But the listeners this week did it for me.
Well, Stephen, you attempted something new in the last week.
It wasn't a diet.
It wasn't. No, you've not started that yet.
Definitely not.
But Stephen attempted his first video selfie. Now, this is fantastic. It's already had 9 shares on Facebook, and 555 people have watched it.
Who are these people? Who's watching this?
Well, one of these people is Peter. He got in touch via Facebook, and he said he's looking forward to listening to Amy's thoughts on the blog, because you were talking about the VI conversation.
That's right, yeah.
You also shared it on Twitter. Stuart was in touch via Twitter. He said, great video. Nice idea for a programme too. He's going to listen this week. Good luck with it all, Stephen.
Doesn't mean the video is a good idea. That ain't happening, I tell you.
Sis,
that.
Stuart. This is a nice one. This one is from friend of the show, Sam Little. She said that she watched the video selfie, and she said, Stephen, looking good.
Yeah, that's from a visually impaired person. That's all I'm saying. Well, I don't think Hollywood is coming calling. Hollywood is probably more likely to come calling.
Well, there was one more before you throw me off, but the final one I thought was genius. It was from Woodside Apps commenting on Stephen's first video selfie, and they just simply said 2 words, oh no.
That sounds about right. Thanks to Chris Wallace, our producer, for jumping into the studio today to share your views with all of us. That's it for the podcast for Tuesday, the 31st of July. Join me at 10 a.m. weekdays live on RNIB Connect Radio. Or, of course, you get the podcast here, the summary, the bite-sized version, however you want to call it, every single weeknight from just after 5 o'clock on the podcast. Thanks so much for listening. We'll catch you again soon.
The Daily Connect Podcast.